Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Hey, welcome to the show, 908 on KDXU. I'm Andy Griffin. Victor Iverson is here with me, County Commissioner. Hey, Vic.
Hey, good morning, Andy, and good morning to all the listeners out there. It's I love this time of year. I don't know if everybody else does.
You do. You like the extreme heat.
Well, what I like is that you start to feel summer wane. Okay. You know, summer's still here, but you're starting to feel like, hey, maybe we're going to get some relief coming up. So it always makes me happy and smile.
The only thing I don't like is, football, high school football starts.
Oh, yeah.
I did a game last Friday. And we got lucky because a storm had just come in. It delayed the game. That's bad, but it cooled things down.
Yep.
But usually the first three or four games here in St. George and Hurricane and Washington are pretty brutal when it comes to heat, man.
Well, what I mean when I like this time of year is that you can feel hope in the air, right?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
the summer's so abusive. We've made it through July and we're circling down on August. So anyway, summer's wrapping up. So.
Well, and one of the things I liked about living in northern Utah that I miss is at night it would cool down in northern Utah. Even though it get up in the 90s, sometimes close to 100 in, say, Salt Lake, about 9:30 at night, it's really pleasant. Here it's still pretty darn hot, in September it does start to do that here now, where it cools down at night and stuff. So that's good.
Well, we endure July and August so that we can have...
That's right.
Good weather most of the year. And, of course, keep praying for rain. Man, we're dry out there. And I was talking to some of my friends up in Enterprise, and, man, it's really dry up in that drainage. And, of course, it's dry all over, but especially up there. So we desperately need moisture, and hopefully not too much, because the fires, of course, up in Pine Valley, there's a real threat of water coming down, mudslides. I know we're working really hard with our federal partners to kind of come up with planning for that, to deal with that. And of course, you know, as residents try to recover from that fire, you know, that's a big deal, and it's not an easy solution. We're doing some engineering and some work on it, but anyway, we just hopefully the rain will come a little gentle, and we won't have as much up there. So
let's talk a little bit while we're on it, on water. You know, we have a situation here where you got the approval for to start on the reuse system and everything. And, I'm a big supporter of that. I think it's a fantastic idea. But there's still people out there that are going, wait, we're going to take sewage water and make it drinkable? How can we do that? First of all, the technology is there to do it.
Yeah.
And second of all, that's what has got to happen, really, if we're going to make it through this. But how do you, Vic, teach people that to get over the ick factor, one person called it toilet to tap, which is not true, but how do you get people over that?
Well, first of all, people need to know that we have been using treated water for quite a while, at least water out of the St. George Treatment Center. And so when you see the golf courses being watered in the middle of the afternoon and you go, hey, you know, the city's been telling me to water at night and here they are out there watering, it's because up to this time we have not had any storage for that water. So you just basically have to use it or put it back into the river. So that water,
lose it.
That water is already clean enough for human contact, not human consumption.
Right.
And over the next couple of years, there's several cycles to this process. One would be that water will go into what's called ag conversion. We can use that water to irrigate crops, irrigate landscaping, and then eventually it will go back into the reservoirs to be mixed, and then eventually go back through the water treatment plant. So it's not going to go directly from a treatment plant into the pipe system. And it'll be a few years, quite a few years actually, before it makes its way directly into the potable system. So I encourage everybody not to freak out yet.
Some people are already.
Yeah. And just recognize that it's good practice to conserve this resource, to reuse the resource of water. And so for right now, it's going to be an ag conversion, a landscape for a while.
Okay.
And we're going to be building a, you know, kind of the the storage system that we need and the pipe system. So right now there's a engineering study, the studies that are going on what needs to be built to make that system work.
That original kind of influx of money is really that's for the start of it, right? The pipes are the very first thing you need to work on, right?
Yeah. So right now, you know, we have to do quite a bit of environmental work, and so that's going on right now. But of course, the Toker Reservoir, Chief Toker Reservoir, mm-hmm. over by Anderson Junction, is kind of a part of this process, right? So it was built for irrigation exchange in the town of Tokerville, and now that Ash Creek Special Service District, for those that live in the St. George area, that's the sewer system that collects sewer on the east side of the county. They are just finishing up a water treatment plant in between Tokerville and Leverkin. And once that water treatment plant comes online, there'll be an exchange where that water will go into the Leverkin irrigation system and eventually have a pipe over to Chief Toker Reservoir. And that water will then be stored there and come back into the secondary irrigation system. So it'll be a minute before it makes its way into our reservoir. But it is a step in the right direction.
Now, it was specifically mentioned when the story came out that the funding was part of the funding was for four reservoirs.
Yeah.
Is that Toker one of them?
Well, Toker's...
Or that was already financed.
Well, we have received funding for Toker, so I believe it's Toker that they're talking about, and what we call Graveyard Wash,
which we're still trying to change the name on.
There's probably going to be some sort of name contest on that one.
I hope so, yeah.
Now, that one is going to be built in conjunction with St. George City, and it's going to be another storage facility for secondary water. And then, of course, the big one that we're working on is the Warner Valley Reservoir.
So. Big boy, yeah.
Yeah.
And that one, according to Zach Renstrom, will hold more water than even Sand Hollow holds now.
Yeah, it's going to be
Because it'll be deeper.
Yeah, it'll be deeper, and it'll probably be kind of the epicenter of this water exchange that we're talking about.
Yeah, but I know... as good a job as we've done with the PR campaigns and getting people to conserve and stuff, this kind of stuff still is necessary. I mean, we can save all we want, but still, eventually we got to.
Well, and the one conversation that's always out there is, are we doing all of this just to facilitate more growth? And that's not the goal here. The goal is that we have been tasked to develop water, to make water available, and so that's what we're working on. This is something that is really kind of wired into our DNA. And water conservation there's been water restrictions, for example, in St. George going back into the mid-50s. And so at times as we've grown and not had ample water, or drought has happened like it is right now, because we're basically in almost a biblical type of drought, it calls upon all of us to conserve water and to be wise with our resource. And I just encourage people to understand that, you know, this isn't growth driven. You know, we're all here because of, you know, the infrastructure that was built by others. And it's kind of, you know, you keep digging wells, even though somebody dug a well so that you could have a drink of water in the past.
So will you go over maybe a little bit what the requirements are for a new house? But I think maybe some people don't even understand it. There's some pretty strict restrictions for new builds.
Yeah.
When it comes to water.
So when people hear or read articles in the local media about conservation ordinances that have recently been passed, what they need to recognize is that all of those ordinances are related to new growth. There's not going to be water cops out there, for example, you know, writing citations to old growth. there are some examples of abuse of water use, where people are using like a meter to irrigate a tropical forest, not only on their lot, but, you know, maybe the lot next door. So
and the street out front.
And the street out front. So really a lot of it is having a conversation with the public about decorative grass. In other words, we really want to encourage landscape and have people have beautiful yards, but we just want to have a conversation about a decorative grass. If the only time you walk on your grass is to mow it, then maybe working together we could find some more water-wise ways to landscape. And so And then there's some other conservation measures as far as utilities and different things with new builds that are being required. And all of that will just help conserve growth or conserve water. What people have to understand is that 60% of all the water that goes through people's meters is used in landscape. And so if we can reduce that, it really does allow us to have more water in the system. And in drought years like right now, it's critical. So
one of the things that, and I did an article on this a while back, is trees are huge.
Yeah.
Trees don't use that much water, not like grass does. And trees, they bring shade.
Yeah.
There's so many benefits to having a tree. And you say, okay, well, yeah, but if I plant a tree now, it's going to be 10 years before it's really, you know, giving shade and stuff like that. Well, that's okay. You do it now in 10 years, that's pretty good.
Well, and there's a lot of different varieties of trees out there. You know, obviously, if you plant some really beautiful maples or whatever, it's going to take a minute for them to grow. But, you know, there's other trees that within a few years, they can be providing shade. And what we don't want to do is what I believe the city of Tucson did in Arizona, where they took all their trees out and then found their electric bills going through the roof.
Concrete jungle.
Yeah, they created kind of a heat desert. And so we've always talked about that. That's one of the reasons, for example, that the city of St. George and the Water Conservancy District years ago invested in the desert gardens. And I have to admit, I wasn't in office at the time they built it, and I kind of scratched my head a little bit. But I've really watched how that's turned into kind of a beautiful space, but also a space where people can get ideas on how beautiful landscape can be with a water-wise approach.
Yeah, I get kind of, it probably cracks you up a little bit, also makes you angry. People come here and they're used to places that have a lot of grass because they have maybe a big giant river running through and they're like, well, it's my right to grow along. Well, yeah, it is. Okay, go ahead. But you know what? You're living in the desert now.
Exactly. You know, a few years ago we had a conference here with county commissioners from the entire, you know, western part of the United States, and there were even county commissioners here from the east side, and we were showing them our water system. We took them up to the diversion dam, showed them how, you know, it went from there into our reservoirs, into our treatment plants, and I think they were very impressed with how much mileage we get out of our water. And I hope people that are listening and will have a conversation about water, and they'll think about all of the effort it takes to get water so it'll come out of their tap and that they'll treat it, you know, respectfully. I hear some of these, you know how people are on Facebook and social media. They're like, oh, they're talking about water conservation. I'm going to go turn on my shower all day so that, you know, they don't have so the growth will stop or whatever. And it's like, you know, I just ask people to just think a minute and take care of that water resource that we have.
I did a story not long ago about the history of a lawn, and it dates back to, so back in old times, let's go say 1600s, if you could afford land that didn't grow crops on it, then you were a rich person. And that's kind of where lawns came about. It was rich people saying, look, I can grow something that produces no fruit, nothing to eat out of it, just grass, and it became like a status symbol, and that carried on to, of course, the history of our young country in the United States of America, and people just like, yeah, I want to be able to grow something that doesn't produce anything, and that's what we have now with grass, is that, you know, for the most part, it doesn't really benefit us too much. I mean, I guess if you don't throw the football around or something, there's that, but
well, when you think about it, everything east over towards the Mississippi, places like Virginia and stuff, they get 75, 80 inches of rain a year.
Yeah, we get 8.
Yeah, we get 8 normally, and I think this year we're like
3.
Three. So we do the best we can and with the water, and it is, you know, grass is nice. Everybody loves it, but if the only time you're walking on it's to mow it, or if it's in a strip where most of the water to water, it has to go on the sidewalk, maybe we can find a more water efficient landscape for you. So
I just went on a cruise out of New Orleans, and the start of the cruise, you spend about 2 hours on the Mississippi River headed up before you hit the ocean. And I couldn't, and it was the same when I had gone to Europe last year. I can't believe how much water there is in some places. And Mississippi is just, I mean, they call it the mighty Mississippi for a reason. This thing is humongous, and there's water everywhere. And I couldn't help but think, you know, people in Louisiana, where I was, have no concept of what it's like to be low on water, or to have water problems, or to have a, you know, I mean, they have water towers there, but that's so they can get pressure.
Yep.
You know, so the water is coming downhill when it comes into people's houses. That's the only reason they have it, because they have plenty of water. So
I've heard the statistic that the Mississippi runs as much water in a week as the Colorado runs in a year.
Wow.
And don't quote me on that. I need to go, you know, do more research.
Somebody's Googling it right now.
Somebody's Googling, like... But the point of it is the volume of water in the Mississippi is just huge compared to the Colorado. And the Colorado is now at, what, 40 million people dependent on that drainage. And so, you know, the Colorado isn't the Mississippi, but there has actually been conversations, and I think they're worthy of consideration, is to run a series of canals and reservoirs out of the upper Missouri over into the lower Colorado drainage system. You know, America used to be able to do things like that, but it seems in the last, you know, 4 or 5 decades, we've kind of moved away from being bold. But it would be great to get some of that water over here, because a lot of times it's just causing havoc in the Mississippi drainage. I happened to be on an airplane not too long ago talking with somebody involved in the inspection of seafood and fish that comes out of that Mississippi Delta. And she actually said that one of the challenges they had in their shrimp production and other things is that too much fresh water getting into the, you know, into the estuaries and stuff. So anyway, I found that fascinating, that the Mississippi is probably running more water than it needs to. So,
well, and if you think about, everyone's like, well, why do we have a water problem when 72% of the Earth's surface is water? Well, most of that water is salt water. And Zach Renstrom once told me, he said, if you could invent a way to cheaply desalinate water, you would be the richest man on Earth.
Yeah.
Because we have all that water and we just can't use it.
Well, Israel is doing great things. You know, they've figured out, of course, it's not cheap water, like Zach says. But right now, they're producing enough water out of the ocean water to put it back into the Sea of Galilee and run it back down the Jordan River. And frankly, that's one of the reasons that, the country of Jordan and Israel, are in a peace arrangement when the rest of their neighbors are so hostile. It's because, Jordan has a very, important water relationship with the nation of Israel. There's water that is piped over to Jordan, and so I guess good water brings world peace. You know,
that's a good point. And not only that, when I say it's expensive, right?
Yeah,
it's really a priority thing.
Yeah,
you know, it's only expensive if it's not important to you.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? I mean, luxury and all that stuff. Well. It's not that expensive if that's something that you have to do. And I mean, you look at, you know, even California, they're starting to realize that that's probably the best way to go.
Yeah. Well, I like to quote Ron Thompson. He always said, you know, if you have plenty of water, you have a lot of problems. If you don't have any water, you only have one problem.
One very large problem.
It's going to continue to be a conversation that dominates Washington County as we talk about where we are and where we want to go. You know, I appreciate people kind of engaging in it. I think it's worthy of a conversation. It's our most important resource here is water.
And so. you live in Leverkin, right?
Yes.
Yeah. All right. I was just there.
Yeah.
Saturday night.
Yeah.
So I was there Friday night. I was in Hurricane Friday night because we did the ball game. And then Saturday I took my wife and we went and had kind of a dinner, right? Lunch, dinner at a little place right there on the Hurricane. What do we call it? The Hurricane Dip, the cliff, the where the River
Rock.
Through.
You went to River Rock Roasting?
Yeah, we did. I couldn't remember the name of it.
But, it's a great little place there.
Pollo Tuscan sandwich, and it was very, very good.
And that overlooks what's known as Confluence Park, which is a county park right there that is the confluence of course, of the Virgin River, the Leverkin Creek, and Ash Creek comes into there. A lot of people don't know that Father Escalante and Dominguez came through there in 1776, you know, so.
Vic knows his history.
Yeah,
man.
Almost 270 or 250 years we're celebrating coming up. And so, yeah, we can put one of those signs in 1776, the Spanish came through here. So,
I was going to ask you, speaking of that, this guy started fires at Confluence. I mean, you know, he's been arrested. Bradley Belmore was arrested for allegedly starting several fires on purpose. We had the, I guess they call it, was it the old dump fire or something like that?
Yeah, yeah. So, there was an arson. This happened on Sunday afternoon. There was about 25, 30 acres that burned there, caused quite a bit of smoke. But this gentleman, from my understanding, is somebody that's somewhat new to the area, but he's already become very familiarized.
Well known, unfortunately, with
Purgatory Correction Facility. And I think yesterday he had his arraignment, and the judge recognized that maybe he should stay there. So anyway, it could have been a lot worse. There's actually.
I was going to say, when you're talking arson, you're talking about the potential of people dying.
Yeah,
or buildings burning down, people losing their home or whatever. So
yeah, if it would have been in a place with more fuel, there's not as much fuel there, but it did threaten and could have threatened kind of an area that we use for tortoises. So when people find tortoises that are outside the reserve, they need to go into a place to make sure they don't have sickness before they're released. And so that was right in that area where he started that fire.
Oh wow!
You could have had. Could have had quite a bit of bad things happening, but luckily they got on it really quick and they found him later.
Well, they had pictures and stuff.
Yeah, and
witnesses, so exactly. That helped. So. All right, we're going to take a commercial break. I'm on with Victor Iverson, County Commissioner for Washington County and Leverkin resident, former Hurricane resident. Have you lived in any other towns in the county, or those two?
I like to say that St. George is the city of my birth. I lived here when I was a young child.
You were born, yeah.
Yep.
All right. We'll take a weather break. Be back with more with Vic after this.
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
All right, welcome back. 934 on KDXU. Victor Iverson is with me, County Commissioner. And Vic, thanks for coming.
Yeah, good morning, Andy. It's always good to be here.
I've known Vic for, 6 or 7 years?
Yeah.
So glad you're here.
We get to run into each other. Most of the time it's here, but we need to...
Yeah, we'll see you at parades and things like that,
exactly.
Too.
But, always good to be here. You do such a good job. Thank you.
Victor and Gil Almquist and Adam Snow, right now, your county commissioners. And I think you're all really good guys. I really like you.
Well, thank you.
You're doing a good job.
Well, of course, as you know, county government's more than just three county commissioners. We also have, our county sheriff, county attorney, our assessor, our clerk auditor, our treasurer, and our recorder, and they all do a great job. They're elected, and I should have named all of them as I, named their offices. But county government really isn't just three. It's nine of us. Of course, we did have change just barely as Eric Clark stepped down. His family has moved to Northern Utah. His wife just graduated law school herself and accepted a very
two lawyers in the Clark family.
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't believe.
I wonder what arguments are like around the dinner table. Right?
Well, I shouldn't say this, but Eric said that one of the reasons he was able to make it through law school was because his wife was so bright and so smart. And she really is. Krista is just an amazing, intelligent human being, and so. She was offered a really good job in a law firm doing what she really loved to do. And so they moved up north. And so Jerry Jaeger has just been appointed to serve until the next election. And Jerry Jaeger he's great. We had three fantastic candidates put their name in. Of course, Jerry Jaeger, we had Zach Weiland and Larry Myers, and we went through it's kind of a interesting process. So they have to declare their interest in candidacy, and then three names are given from the Republican Central Committee, or according to state code, whichever party the attorney comes from. And then, of course, the county commission interviews them and decides who should be the next county attorney until the election. So Jerry was successful in the central committee, and we interviewed all three of them, had wonderful conversations with them. They were great men. one of the things that's interesting about this change is both Eric Clark and Brock Belknap before him were our chief civil leads prior to being attorneys, our county attorney. And Jerry is one of our star prosecutors. And so this will be the first time in a while that our county attorney is one of our prosecutors. And that's important because as we grow as a community, so does our prosecutions, so does the number of courts we have down here. Basically public safety between the attorney's office and the sheriff's office, it's almost 70% of the county budget. And so he's going to be able to lead this organization, do a great job. I was going to bring him in this morning. He was actually on the calendar. But as he's working to put together his team, an important appointment came up that he wasn't able to get away from. And so he'll be here next time that we're on.
And I actually know Jerry.
Yeah.
Because my wife worked with Jerry and his wife at Washington City
for quite a few years.
So, in fact, we attended not that long, maybe, I don't know, whenever his wife's birthday was, 3 months ago or more, but a surprise party. We actually all got together at the county attorney's office and surprise, you know. That was a lot of fun.
Oh, that's so great.
Good people. And I'm with you. I think we're in good hands now and got things going the right way. I didn't have also, you were talking about your county employees, I didn't have the Sheriff Brooksby on last week as well.
Yeah.
And he did a fantastic job. I've known Nate also, who was also worked with my wife in Washington City many, many years ago.
Yeah.
So I've known Nate for a long time too as well.
You know, we really do have a great county. I feel honored to work and serve with the men and women of our county and our elected officials. You know, they really do serve and have a servant approach to everything they do and the stewardship. And like you say, you know, Jerry is going to do a great job. And it's good because I'll tell you, as a county commissioner and as Washington County, I really say that one of the secret sauces of Washington County is the relationship that the county commission has with the attorney's office. You think about all the contracts, agendas, everything that we deal with, codes, ordinances. That's just what we deal with on the commission side. And then, of course, you know, Jerry, seeking justice. A lot of people, you know, you need to have a county attorney that not only protects victims, but also seeks justice when it comes to these criminal behaviors, antisocial behaviors. And Jerry's going to do a great job. He's going to balance that very well.
Sometimes you even get a national spotlight. Like what happened last year with, I forget the name now, the lady that abused her children. And
Ruby Frank.
Yeah, Frankie and all that stuff. Sometimes you get a national spotlight. Usually when the national spotlight falls on Utah and our county, it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
You know, and so you have to have some pretty sharp guys in there to kind of represent our county and say, well, this is what we're all about. So.
Yeah, we, you know, Brock and, in fact, Jerry was involved as well and, you know, in some of the abuse that Warren Jeffs was doing out in Colorado City and kind of bringing him to justice there for quite a while. You know, he had a system set up that kind of insulated him and protected him. So it takes a lot. It takes courage to go in.
Yeah.
You know, this abuse case, this torture case that happened out in Ivins. You know, I'm just so, you know, it's so sad, heartbreaking. But when you see the video, for example, of the neighbor that found that child and just how he cared about him, immediately took action, it just really made me proud of our citizens. And then, of course, Jerry, along with Eric Clark and our legislators, worked to kind of strengthen what's called the torture law, because at the time, it was really kind of vague. It was hard to get convictions on it, and it needed to have more teeth. And so out of that case, the law has actually been strengthened and made better so that heaven forbid somebody else in Utah has to deal with a situation like this. They'll have, you know, better tools in the toolbox to bring justice.
Sadly, the spotlight on Utah was a national spotlight on Utah shined Sunday night and yesterday morning with what happened up in Tremont. Sergeant Lee Sorensen and Officer Eric Estrada were fatally shot. Mike Allred, who is a sheriff's deputy up in Box Elder County, was injured along with his canine partner, Azula. I'm just wondering, your reaction as a leader in a community like ours, your kind of thoughts on what happened up there in northern Utah?
Well, I think it just should bring everybody to appreciate law enforcement and law and order and what it takes to protect a community. When you think about Box Elder County, they remind me a lot of Washington County. It's it's on the other end of the state. They're a little bit smaller than us. But if you drive up in the communities of Tremont and Brigham City, you know, it feels a lot like here.
Right.
It doesn't feel like a place where two people responding to a domestic violence case should be gunned down like without, that in cold blood. And so it makes you realize that the men and women in our community that are putting on the uniform, putting on the badge, that are out there interacting, they're really, you know, they never know when there's going to be something like this happen. And so our hearts and prayers go out to that family, go out to that community. At the same time, I was talking to Sheriff Brooksby and Under Sheriff Barry Golding yesterday. Both of them, you know, were wearing their badges with a black stripe through it. And we were talking about how, you know, you never know. You never know when the situation's going to turn aggressive and deadly. And so that's one of the reasons we need to do such a good job in training and protocol. And maybe people wonder sometimes why law enforcement will take the precautions they take. They need to.
There's a reason. I was thinking about that a lot. I remember when I was a kid, I was up in West Jordan. It was right after we'd moved to Utah from Texas, and there was a police officer that lived in my neighborhood, and he had to pull his gun and he had to kill somebody, and they put him on administrative leave while they investigated it and everything. But you know, that guy, and I remember his name, it was Greer, was his last name, G-R-E-E-R, Greer. But I remember talking with him about it, and he said, first of all, it's horrific for a police officer to have to do that. He didn't want to do that.
Yep, yeah.
And he said, the other thing is I've never even had to really pull my gun on anyone ever.
Yeah.
And he said, all of a sudden, it was a split second where it was either I kill him or he kills me.
Yeah.
And he said, I chose number one. I kill him. He says, I didn't want to do that, but that was my choice. And he said, I know a lot of police officers. I've had them on this show, and a lot of them are like, I've never had to fire my gun once in the line of duty. And yet these two guys came up and, you know, they you don't know. I mean, you're given tickets. You're doing all these other things that you think a police officer does. And then one day someone decides that they want to, you know, do what this guy did up in Tremont. And it's just, it's humbling. It really is.
And a few years ago, I was over at the sheriff's office and they had a simulator set up. And these were actually videos of actual events that had happened in our county where, you know, they put me in there and they're running through this simulation of when you were supposed to pull your gun and what you were supposed to do. And
how'd you do?
I one time I got shot and another time I shot a civilian. So not very good, you know.
Hey, we're not letting Vic.
No. But it really humbled me in the fact that, just like you're saying, the moment to make a decision requires training, discipline, and good thought, because these law enforcement folks, especially now when there's so much mental illness and kind of instability in certain personalities that are out there, you know, it can go from just a hello to a very violent situation very quickly. And so, you know, they need to be trained and they need to be supported by our community and let know that, you know, that we support and have confidence in them. And
yeah.
I think, unfortunately, a few years ago, there was an attempt to kind of take a look at criminal justice and maybe try to get people more treatment. I don't necessarily know that that's worked out as successful as we'd want. And I frankly encourage our state legislature to maybe take a look at that, especially when it comes to juvenile crime and you know, other words, let's not give everybody, you know, 50 strikes before we have some sort of tool to put them in incarceration. So,
yeah, and there are some people out there that said, look, the justice system failed this time, because this is a guy, the guy that did the shooting on Sunday night had been arrested three different times, all three times released basically on his own recognizance, which turned out to be not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah.
He'd had a history of domestic abuse. I mean, these kind of things are almost symptoms of what's going to happen. They're foreshadowing of what might happen in the future. And, you know, the same kind of thing can be said with drunk driving. I did a story not long ago about a guy that had been convicted or been arrested 10 times for drunk driving. And on the 11th time, he killed two people because he was driving drunk. And it's like, wait, something along the way, we missed something along the way.
Yeah.
10 times, and you knew he was going to keep doing it. Why wasn't he in jail? Well, you know, he did. He served 2.5 years and got back out and killed somebody. So
it's a tragedy. And
it is.
Yeah, our hearts go out to those families, because as tragic it is to lose them, you know, when you think about their families and the loss there. So anyway, I just encourage everybody to, you know, let's thank our local law enforcement and those that put that badge and gun on every day.
Yeah, next time you want to badmouth a cop because he pulled you over or because he gave you a ticket for littering, whatever it is, say, you know what, this guy is willing every day to go and risk his life.
Yeah.
He is willing to die to help keep the public safe. That's
well, awesome. Maybe when they come up a little more aggressive than what you're thinking, hey, why is he talking to me like that? Or or a little standoffish. I'm just a really nice guy. And it's like, well,
he
doesn't know you yet. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, we'll be right back. Vic Iverson with me today.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's News Talk leader.
You know, I haven't really asked for it, but if you would like to talk to Victor Iverson, make a call or a text. Text me at 435-467-5842. Actually, I have a couple of texts, so we'll get to those in a second. But, yeah, Victor Iverson from Washington County Commission is here. Okay, to say, this is way back on our grass, our water conversation. To say grass doesn't do much for us is not a fair statement. All one needs to do is drive by the golf course at Sunset Corner at night and feel the dramatic temperature drop. That is true.
That is a total truth. Yeah.
Especially if you're riding a motorcycle. If you're on a motorcycle, you hit a grass area, but. Your city officials are blaming everything on climate change. It seems like everybody forgets that we had a drought that started in 99 and went all the way to 2005. Everything was dried up completely. Enterprise, Gunlock, Quail, Lake, you name it, it was all dried up. And then we had a big floods came, and the population was a lot less back then. I don't know.
That text is correct. You know, I know that 18 of the last 20 years, 19 of the last 20 years now have been drought years. And so we really are seeing, you know, there's been a lot of drought. Just a quick update on maybe some issues going around the county. We're finishing up a major expansion out at the jail. We're able to use some of the opioid settlement money that we received, as well as some ARPA money. It's a $25 million build. We're just finishing up a medical wing, 70 new beds, and then we will remodel our booking area, and that will get us down the road. And I just, I'm proud of the fact that instead of having to bond to do it, we've actually, over the last few years, paid off most of our bonds. I think we only have one more bond on a Purgatory Corrections Facility, and that'll be paid off next year. And so that'll get us down the road. We're well underway on another building out by the fairgrounds called Emergency Operations. It'll be for both storage and training. And then, of course, some folks, as you drive down Boulevard, you might see the old Boulevard building is under remodel. And that'll be our federal courts. And the federal court will actually pay rent to the county and help us pay back the cost of that remodel. And also our local justice court will go in the basement. And so, you know, sometimes it's harder to remodel a building than it is to build it brand new.
True.
But
that
building is actually, it's the heart of it is, you know, pretty old. And so we're going to be finishing that remodel. We still have a little bit on that. I think that'll be another year as we get that finished. But anyway, those are kind of three projects the county has going right now. And as we look at those, we're doing them all without bonding. We have very little debt.
That's awesome.
Almost no debt, to be honest with you. And so I think we're pleased that we've been able to be frugal with with the citizens' tax dollars and build the important buildings that we need without going into debt.
Okay, election in November. Adam is running, right?
Obviously, we're not on the ballot this year. Next year.
It's next year.
Myself and Gil Almquist will be on the ballot. Next year's,
Do you have any announcements to make? Are you running again?
I will be. Okay. I think both of us will be asking the voters to reconsider us. And, it's always. This is an important process, and hats off to everybody that is willing to step up and put their hat in the ring and put their names on a ballot. I was really pleased with, the people that were willing, the quality of candidates that we had in these, this primary process and
I agree.
And it's important for the voters to kind of weigh in and decide if you're doing a good job and
the other thing I would add to that is, somebody asked me once if I was going to run for an office, and I was like, no. And they're like, why not? I'm like, those guys work too hard, man. You guys work their tails off. And then add to that, you work your tail off to get a job done, and then you have about 10 loud voices saying, you suck, you're terrible, I hate you, you're awful, what's wrong with you, you're on the take, you're making money on this, all the accusations and silly things that go into it. And I'm like, man, you've got to have, number one, you got to have thick skin and a big heart to hold public office in Utah, anywhere, I guess. But
it's true that you do need to have thick skin, and you need to be willing to, take criticism. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I've found that people will criticize you, but if you're able to make contact with them and have a conversation, a lot of times, especially in our county, you can get people kind of back to where they go, oh, okay, I might not agree with you, but I understand why you made that decision.
Yeah.
And it is interesting. We have had some comments on, for example, the county Facebook page does not allow comment. And the reason why people think, well, gee, they just don't want to hear from us. The problem is it becomes part of a public record, and we've found that, say you want to put something on there and you want to maybe talk about your ex-wife or something, or maybe this has actually happened where people will start fighting back and forth on the comment section.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing we can do because it's now on the public record. So unfortunately, we had to decide after consulting with our attorneys just to turn it off. But there's plenty of other ways to comment about us on Facebook.
Oh, yes, people, there are.
You can actually.
I've read some of those, I know you have too.
Yeah, so hopefully people don't feel like we're denying them access just because we don't allow comments on the county page. But yeah, there's a lot of other opportunities. In fact, today is our commission meeting, and we do have from 3 to 4. The meeting starts at 4, but from 3:30 to 4. It's kind of an open period where we're just there in the chambers, and you can come and talk to us about whatever you want. And so we'd encourage anybody to do that.
I was reading something. If you don't like something, then vote them out. And my one friend was saying, wow, I hate keeping pointing to the vote. But that's America right there.
Yeah.
You really do. I mean, if you find something that you don't feel is right with a candidate or something, use that and say, look, this is what, and if they don't have a good explanation for it, then you have the opportunity to vote for someone else.
Yeah.
So that's,
we go back and forth on term limits and I think it's a valid conversation, but I will say that term limits really should happen at the ballot box and the voters should decide.
Very well said. I agree.
And so we should have term limits based on job performance.
Well said. We do in our regular jobs, right?
Yep.
So,
yeah.
All right. Victor Iverson, County Commissioner here on the Andy Griffin Show. Thank you, Victor, for coming
thanks,
in today.
Andy. It's good to be here. So.
We're out of time. I'll be back here tomorrow. I'll try to do better then, I promise. We'll see you then.